Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 547, titled Hello, Dolly. This is being recorded on April 9th of the year 2006. We're going to plunge right in due to the limitations of time, and we're going to continue with our reading of some excerpts of an interview with Victor and Victoria Tremondi. That is a pseudonym used by a couple of German authors and publishers who were initially close professional allies of the Dalai Lama as well as spiritual affiliates of the Dalai Lama, but they came to be among his most severe critics. Very briefly, I'm going to repeat the caveat that I did in Side 1. I don't want to be misunderstood in any way as characterizing Buddhism as fascist any more than when I characterize fascist elements in other religions or when I identify fascist elements in other religions. One should not be misunderstood, or I should not be misunderstood as characterizing those religions as fascist. But as we saw in Side 1, there were some aspects of Tibetan society that were of great interest to the SS, and as we're going to see in our study of what has become part of the Underground Reich, there are some aspects of Tibetan Buddhism which could be adapted to an occult fascist and chauvinist viewpoint, and given the SS and war criminal links of the Dalai Lama, as that we looked at in Side 1, and as we're going to see in future broadcasts, the Dalai Lama's position in a covert action pantheon very much operational in Central Asia, what we're about to read cannot be too readily dismissed. I also should say that I do not believe in the existence of spirits and demons and so forth, but these people do, and so when we're going to read about some of their rituals, that should be understood. In the context of any religion or any, basically in the context of the application of religion to politics, a true believer of any kind is very, very important. Now, in this interview with James Stevens from September 11th of 2003, Victor and Victoria Tremondi, whose background I've just set forth, proceed as follows in analyzing some of the religious philosophy of the Dalai Lama and how some features of Tantric Buddhism can be adapted to a chauvinist and fascist occult viewpoint. The 14th, Victor Tremondi, or the Tremondis go on to say, the 14th Dalai Lama, the God King of Tibet, is the highest representative of Tantric Buddhism established in Tibet in the 8th century. Tantrism, the last stage in the history of Buddhism since the 5th century AD in India, is based on ritual and magic formulas. Not unlike other religions, it also has skeletons in its closet, which it carefully conceals as a guest in the Western world. Tibetan Tantrism is a belief in spirits and demons, secret sexual practices, occultism, mind control, and an obsession with power. In contrary to every democratic custom, the present Dalai Lama consults with the Nekhung Oracle, a monk who is possessed by a Mongolian war god, on all important state decisions. What primarily concerns us about the interreligious ceremony in the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., is the level of naivete in the West. For the past 25 years, the Dalai Lama has quietly performed the Kalachakra Tantra, the Wheel of Time, the highest of all tantric initiations for tens of thousands of spiritual novices in the West, introducing tantric ideology, secret sexual practices, and magic rituals integrated into the context of his religious and political worldview. Critical voices have been raised while he continues to secretly transmit the Kalachakra's prophetic vision of the establishment of a universal Buddhocracy, or Shamnala, in which spiritual and worldly power are united in one person, the world emperor, unquote, or Chakravartin, wherein other religions will no longer exist. Skipping down, Tremondi goes on to describe more about the Kalachakra Tantra. In the Kalachakra Tantra is prophesied the establishment of a Buddhocratic empire. A clash of civilizations will arise as the military forces of Buddhism wage war against the armies of non-Buddhist religions. Murderous superweapons possessed by the Buddhist Shamnala army are described at length and in enthusiastic detail in the Kalachakra Tantra text, Sri Kalachakra 1, pages 128 through 142, and employed against, quote, enemies of the Dharma or the Buddha's teachings, unquote. Over the last 5 years in the German-speaking countries, these shadow aspects of Lamaism have led to a vast, steady, and increasing stream of criticism in the media. During the Kala Chakra initiation of the Dalai Lama last year in Austria, there were very controversial debates on TV and radio stations and press media. The internationally well-known newspaper Der Standard published an article entitled "A Warrior Ritual with the Dalai Lama, the Kala Chakra." And then the German weekly of Christian intellectuals Der Rheinische Merkur entitled an article, "What is Hidden Behind the Kala Chakra Tantra? Supremely Ferocious Warriors." Unquote. Stevens, who are these non-Buddhist enemies spoken of in the Kala Chakra teachings? I've seen articles in the Buddhist magazines in the Shambhala Sun and Tricycle about lamas dressing up in military uniforms. I thought Buddhism was a peaceful faith. By the way, parenthetically, I should interject again, as with many religions, arguably all of them, there are different sects with different viewpoints. At least some Buddhist sects do have an apocalyptic and militant vision diametrically opposed to the teachings of the Buddha himself, and I am not unfamiliar with the core teachings of Buddhism. But one should note that not only the Dalai Lama, but also certain other strains of Buddhism, including the apocalyptic Buddhist viewpoint of a Japanese Buddhist monk named Nichiren, lend themselves to a fascist interpretation and application. Indeed, Nichiren was very much of a source of inspiration to the Japanese fascists and imperialists in the 30s and 40s, as some of his apocalyptic teaching about a world-ending sort of Armageddon-like battle was adapted to the Japanese philosophy, the Japanese imperialist philosophy. More about the Tremonti's interpretation of the Dalai Lama's brand of tantric Buddhism. Tremonti, the secret text of the Kala Chakra, explicitly names the leaders of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam as the opponents of Buddhism. Quote, Adam, Enoch, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Mani, Muhammad, and the Mahdi, unquote, describing them as, quote, the family of the demonic snakes, unquote, Sri Kala Chakra 1, page 154. The final Armageddon-like battle, or Shambhala War, ends in the total victory of the Buddhists. The official Kala Chakra interpreter Alexander Berzin openly compares the principles of the Islamic Jihad with that of the Shambhala War. As in the Islamic martyr ideology, Shambhala warriors who will be killed in the last battle have earned passage into the Buddhist paradise. The military scenarios in some Buddhist centers, such as the Shambhala training camps of the deceased Lama Chagyum Trungpa, have until now only a symbolic meaning, and yet they are interpreted as a spiritual preparation of the prophesied Great Shambhala War. In the imagination of some lamas, all participants in a Kala Chakra initiation have the questionable privilege of being reborn as Shambhala warriors, in quote, in order to be able to participate in the coming apocalyptic battle, either as infantry or officers dependent on rank. High lamas of particular lineages have already been assigned to commanding positions in the future. And so again, note how some aspects of Tibetan Buddhism and the Kala Chakra Tantra tradition, basically have lent themselves to a chauvinist and fascist viewpoint, or what could be applied to a fascist viewpoint, adapted to a fascist viewpoint. Again, I don't want to be misunderstood as characterizing all or even most of Buddhism in this way, but there are parts of Buddhism, just like parts of Christianity and parts of Islam and parts of Judaism, that have lent themselves very nicely to such interpretations. And as we're going to see, the Dalai Lama's warlike philosophy has indeed been melded to a covert action program in which the Dalai Lama and his Tibetan Buddhists and the, quote, East Turkmenistanis, basically Muslim Uyghurs of Xinjiang province in China, we're going to see the Dalai Lama and some Islamists, and we're going to see how in turn they have been fitted into a covert action mosaic, which has been subsumed under the auspices of none other than Karl von Habsburg, the heir to the throne of the old Austro-Hungarian Empire. Now, again, with regard to religious philosophy and its application to politics, the true believer is a very, very important creature. And we're going to go more into some of the aspects of Tibetan Buddhism and how they were adapted to the SS philosophy, and how in turn this helped to spawn some of the links between the Dalai Lama and people who basically are esoteric occult fascists, many of them with SS links. Returning to this interview with James Stevens in the Tremondis. In our historical essay, Hitler, Buddha, and Krishna, An Unholy Alliance from the Third Reich to Today, unquote, we show that the warlike and racist ideas of Heinrich Himmler of the SS and of other well-known neo-fascists have been fundamentally inspired by elements of different Asian religions such as Vedism, Buddhism, Lamaism, and that prominent German Zen teachers Dockrym and Herigel have been convinced Nazis. It's really shocking. In the SS Annenerbe, which was the academic brain trust of the SS, that its chief Heinrich Himmler was openly engaged in ongoing discussions with the most distinguished German Orientalists of his time in the construction of a new Indo-Aryan Nazi religion. After World War II, this discussion was continued by prominent neo-fascist ideologues. Both of our books have stimulated a great discussion about the ideological sources of religious fundamentalism and about the clash of civilizations. Skipping down, Tremondi. It is a fact that the Shambhala war ideology of the Kalachakra Tantra has led to aggressive behavior, megalomaniacal visions, and conspiracy theories both in the history of Asia as well as in that of religious fascism and neo-fascism. Already in the SS Annenerbe, where Heinrich Himmler's Nazi religion was born, there was an interest in the contents of the Kalachakra Tantra. The influential fascist and cultural philosopher Julius Avila saw in the world of Shambhala an esoteric center of a sacred warrior race. This vision is today still firmly anchored in the religious ideas of the international far-right movement. That alone makes it necessary for the Dalai Lama to distance himself clearly from the warmongering Shambhala myth. Instead of this, he has cultivated friendly contacts with people such as the ex-SS man Bruno Begay, convicted of helping to murder more than 86 Jews, and Heinrich Harrer, author of 7 Years in Tibet, a chronicle of his experience with the Dalai Lama over 7 years prior to his exile to India. The homepage of the Tibetan government in exile shows the Dalai Lama between Bruno Begay on the right and Heinrich Harrer on his left. Begay had been a member of the famous SS Tibet expedition organized by the SS in 1938 and 9, whose primary goal was to find traces of an ancient, lost, Indo-Aryan religion in the Himalayas. Some occult leaders in the SS were convinced that Tibetan lamas are the key holders of these Indo-Aryan mysteries. Begay is highly respected by the government of Tibet in exile as a chief witness for the political independence of that country in the 1930s and 40s of the last century. Nearly unknown until now are the contacts of the Dalai Lama with the French SS collaborator, convinced anti-Semite, recognized Orientalist, and Kalachakra Tantra expert Jean-Marquis Revivre in his absence convicted and given the death sentence for turning Jews over to the Gestapo in France. In addition, the founder of an esoteric Hitler movement, the ex-Chilean diplomat Miguel Serrano, promoter of an extremely racist SS mysticism which is based on tantric practices and on the idea of the Shambhala warriors, met the Dalai Lama 4 times. And note that with Serrano, as with Mr. Jean-Marquis de Vivre, these are people whose SS and fascist, and in the case of Revivre, war criminal credentials, go back to the 1940s. So these are other ongoing SS/Nazi links with the Dalai Lama stretching over decades and placing him in contact with some serious, serious murderous war criminals. And in our next program, we're going to take a look at some of the other links and causes espoused, some of the links of and causes espoused by the Dalai Lama. His brand of apocalyptic Buddhism also appears to have dovetailed with the apocalyptic interpretations of Buddhism used by Shoko Asahara of the Aum Shinrikyo cult, another cult group that relied on the philosophy of Adolf Hitler. There are not only For the Record programs, but miscellaneous archive shows talking about Shoko Asahara, another of the associates of the Dalai Lama. Continuing with the Tremonti's critique here. Well known became his, the Dalai Lama's, relationship with the Japanese terrorist Shoko Asahara, whom he described even after the Tokyo sarin gas attacks as his friend, albeit an imperfect one, unquote. Only later did he distance himself from the guru. Asahara's doomsday philosophy was mainly influenced by the Shambhala ideology and by Tibetan Tantrism. By the way, a key influence on Shoko Asahara was the aforementioned Japanese apocalyptic Buddhist monk Nichiren, who was also utilized and adapted by the Japanese imperialists and fascists of the 30s and 40s. Now, as I mentioned, a true believer is a very useful political creature. I don't believe in the mystical impact or import of rituals, nor do I believe in demons, but true believers do. And what I'm about to relate may have no significance whatsoever. It may just be irrelevant. On the other hand, it may be relevant as hell. I'm going to relate it. You decide on its importance. Among the places where a Kalachakra mandala was performed was the World Trade Center right after the 1993 bombings. James Stevens interviews the Tremontis, and they describe the significance of this mandala and later go on to describe one performed at the World Trade Center. Tremonti. A mandala is a sacred pictogram. One also can call it a magic circle. It is an instrument to evoke the gods, goddesses, and demons of the tantric pantheon. For a modern Western approach in which religion and arts are not yet unified, the mandala is a work of art. However, in the Lamaist tradition, where there is no difference between the aesthetic and the sacred, and where art is always sacred art, the mandala is a spiritual power vortex, an assembly point of gods and demons, a palace of the divine, a spiritual battery from where powerful energies are radiating. It is also connected with the Lamaist idea that the place where the mandala is erected stands under the absolute control of its divine or, we would say, demonic inhabitants. The intricate mandala constructed during the Kalachakra ceremony is made with colored sand and symbolizes the whole universe. At the end of the ritualistic performance, the sand construction will be destroyed by the Tibetan monks. The so-called dismantling, unquote, of the sand mandala symbolizes the destruction of the world and of the universe. This is part of the apocalyptic doomsday scenarios in the Kalachakra prophecies, which culminate in a final battle and the end of our planet. Nevertheless, the construction and destruction of the mandala is presented by the Dalai Lama as a contribution to world peace. Although one would desire to believe in its peace-producing energy, realistically one has to accept that the construction of this magic circle after more than 25 years in the West has brought no more appeasement to the people than it did in Tibet, which has suffered much. The aggressive and terrorist energies have become more and stronger in our world, and the clash of religions has become an everyday problem in politics. Is it not evident that the construction of 300 sand mandalas throughout the U.S. that you were speaking of has not contributed to peace in this country? History, on the contrary, has proceeded in the opposite direction and is on the way of destruction and war. Again, I don't attribute that to the rituals, but true believers do. And note the following, continuing with the James Stevens interview with the Tremontis, again, former disciples of and close professional supporters of the Dalai Lama who turned against him. In our studies, it was alarming to find that following the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993, a Wheel of Time, or Kalachakra sand mandala, was built in the lobby of Tower 1. For over 30 days, many of the World Trade Center workers and visitors were invited by the Tibetan monks to participate in the construction of this mandala. When the Dalai Lama visits New York in the next days, we would ask, quote, why the terrible event of 9/11 could happen at the World Trade Center that was consecrated by the so-called Circle of Peace, unquote, the Kala Chakra San Mandela, the same Mandelas that were unable to prevent the destruction of 7,500 monasteries of Tibet. In this context, a sentence in the Tantra expert and Indian scholar Shashi Bhushan Dasgupta may well be remarkable. Quote, the word Kala means time, death, and destruction. Kala Chakra is the wheel of destruction, unquote. We just did find on the internet a statement of a participant in the World Trade Center Kala Chakra ceremony, which seems really revealing, especially because it was made by an initiate of the Tantra. The topic shifted to the Kala Chakra Mandela that was made at One World Trade Center. I was at the dissolution ceremony there, maybe around 96. The monks gathered up all the sand from the Mandela at One World Trade Center, put it in a vase, then carried it across the bridge into World Financial Center through the Winter Garden, then dumped the sand ceremoniously into the Hudson River for the sake of world peace. The surface of the river glittered in the afternoon sun, and I cried. 5 years later, the whole building is gone, just like the San Mandela, unquote. So again, this may have a great deal of significance. It may not be significant at all. You decide. And in that regard, I would cite for people the many neo-Nazi and Nazi connections, as well as other fascist connections to September 11th, those summarized in, among other programs, For the Record 456. The Tremontis go on to comment, we are really uneasy, if you ask us, as to what may potentially happen if this Buddhist jihad ideology of the Kala Chakra Tantra will become a new version of the Chinese political self-understanding. Will the much more peaceful and softer philosophy of Taoism and Confucianism be replaced by the Shambhala warrior doctrine, which was once propagated in the 30s by the Japanese Shinto fascists to mobilize the Mongolian minorities of Manchuria and West China? If the present situation in Europe is any indicator, we must say that we are alarmed as we witness the rising interest in Germany of fascist, neo-fascist, and Nazi intellectuals, and in Asia of a terrorist like the Japanese doomsday guru Shoko Asahara in the ideological concepts of the Shambhala War of the Kala Chakra Tantra. This should be a mene tekel that the writing on the wall, unquote, as a major wake-up call for the West. And again, although due to the limitations of time, we're not going to be able to go into what ancient, what Tibetan society was like before the Chinese came in. We'll do that in our next program. We are going to go into not only the long relationship between the Dalai Lama and elements of the CIA during the Cold War, we're going to go into a very probing analysis by Michael Parenti of the nature of Tibetan society before the Chinese moved in. That, however, will come in our next discussion. But for the purposes of the present discussion, what's important is to note that the Dalai Lama and his Tibetan government in exile milieu are part of a larger alliance with East Turkestan and Inner Mongolia, which appears to be part of a covert action program aimed at Central Asia and at controlling part of the Earth Island. From an Indian intelligence report that we're going to go into at greater length in future broadcasts, of Islamist activity in Xinjiang province, known by the Islamists and separatists as East Turkestan, two groups in particular are cause for concern: the East Turkestan Islamic Party and the East Turkestan Liberation Organization. ETIP was founded in the early 1980s with the goal of establishing an independent state of Eastern Turkestan and advocates armed struggle. SHAT's members have reportedly been involved in various bomb plots and shootouts. Uyghurs were found fighting with al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. We are aware of credible reports that some Uyghurs who were trained by al-Qaeda have returned to China. The Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan and the Abu Sayyaf of the southern Philippines have been designated as foreign terrorist organizations under the U.S. law of 1996, but not the Eastern Turkestan Islamic Party, though all the three are members of Osama bin Laden's International Front for Jihad Against the USA and Israel. And skipping down, the second similarity relates in the external causes of aggravation of the terrorist violence in Xinjiang. Just as in JNK and Xinjiang too, there are two distinct terrorist or extremist movements, one resorting to violence on ethnic grounds to assert the Uyghur ethnic identity against the perceived Han Chinese domination, and the other using religious and pan-Islamic arguments to justify violence for the establishment of an independent Islamic state. While the ethnic separatist elements have been the beneficiaries of sympathy and support from the Dalai Lama's setup and the Tibetan diaspora abroad and the U.S., Taiwanese, and Turkish intelligence services, the religious fundamentalist elements have been in receipt of support from the Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, or ISI-backed jihadi organizations, in Pakistan, the Taliban, and bin Laden's International Islamic Front for Jihad against the USA and Israel. In the 1970s and the 1980s, the Central Intelligence Agency of the USA had built up a network of contacts with the Uyghur separatist elements, and some of those who had in the past worked for the Munich-based Radio Liberty of the CIA, such as Erkin Alptekin, chairman of the Euro-based Eastern Turkestani Union, and a close Uyghur associate of the Dalai Lama, are now in the forefront of the ethnic separatist movement. And in turn, that ethnic separatist movement appears to be alive and well, at least in part, under the auspices of a UN organization, the UNPO, of which the aforementioned Erkin Alptekin, the associate of the Dalai Lama, is part. And who heads that up? From another website, the eldest son and heir of the dynasty is Karl von Habsburg, who lives in Austria and has served in the Austrian army, skipping down. He works quietly to change the Austrian laws of 1919 that forbid the Habsburgs from holding any political office and has often been mentioned as a possible chancellor of the Austrian Republic. At this time, Karl von Habsburg is the general director of the UNPO, the United Nations and Peoples Organization. In 1993, Karl married Francesca Thyssen-Bornemisza, who is well known in European high society. That's the head of the organization into which the Dalai Lama and his Islamist associates have been fitted. More about this in weeks to come. Now, again, this is a broadcast that is likely to be confusing or puzzling to some. We're going to deal with this at greater length and in greater detail in future weeks. Suffice it to say, I'm discussing the Dalai Lama and how some features of Tibetan Buddhism can be adapted to a fascist-slash-occultist worldview in order to understand how the Dalai Lama as a political animal fits into a larger picture, a larger milieu of covert action. I would recommend that listeners not only exercise patience, but see how this fits into future discussion of the UNPO, the House of Habsburg, the Underground Reich, and how the Dalai Lama and his Tibetan government in exile milieu avec SS officers fits into a larger pattern of collaboration with Islamists in the Xinjiang region of China, quote, East Turkmenistan, as the Dalai Lama and the UNPO call it, and we're going to see how all of this fits into a much larger Underground Reich picture. Now, I recommend that listeners avail themselves of the vast amount of information available on the Spitfire website and linked websites. I turn every program into a long article-length description that is available on the Spitfire website within a few weeks at the most of the broadcast of each program. These descriptions are very close to transcripts, so some who've inquired about transcripts, not as such, but pretty damn close. So do take advantage of the long written descriptions on the Spitfire website and the linked websites with books, with documents about the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry, the two websites maintained by sister station WFMU that are archiving the entire For the Record series on Real Audio. Use those resources to flesh out your understanding and to provide a foundation for grasping what we're going to be looking at in future discussions of how the Dalai Lama fits into this very unsavory concatenation. This concludes, by the way, the Spitfire website is www.spitfirelist.com. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 547, Hello Dalai, being recorded on April 9th of 2006. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.